Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It comes down to this.
Nine, use it!
A solid Scottish scrum. George Full. Good tackle coming from Chris Harris. Scotland have turned it. All they've got to do is get it into touch. The ball goes back. The captain fires it as far as he can. Scotland have done it.
Hello and welcome back to Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The Grand Slam is on. Scotland beat England in the Calcutta Cup and the hype train is reaching new and uncharted speeds. Alan and Matt, we were both there at the weekend. Matt, you and I were there to the bitter end in Fingers Piano Bar at 3 a.m. The only way to celebrate a big Scotland win like that.
Pretty much. I mean, it was a real day of a roller coaster of emotions in terms of, I think it was the most stressed I'd ever been watching the Scotland game. Genuinely, I felt a bit anxious the whole time. But then as soon as it was all over and you sort of could process the victory, then it was a good night ahead.
It certainly was. Alan, you had a slightly different evening. You took Freya to the game. Has Freya now, is she now undefeated against England?
She is, has never experienced a loss to England in her 15-month life.
However, rarefied there.
Just a bit of advice for any new fathers out there. I would not suggest taking a 15-month-old baby to a rugby match in the winter in Scotland. It was fine, but I'm not going to do it again.
Did she enjoy herself?
No, she fucking hated it.
Did she?
She's like, what is this? It's like fireworks. And then like, I had sort of the two very different English supporters on either side of us as like a family. So we had on one side, they're like a very quiet, very sort of nice, helpful English fan on my left, I think completely sober. And then on my right, a handsome lad who told me he was 10 pints down, sang Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, maybe 12 times, and then basically had a conversation with Ashley about how he had a nail fetish and he really liked her nails. And I was like, this is just all getting a bit much here.
Oh my God.
But good day. But you know what? Who gives a shit?
I was speaking to somebody afterwards at one of the bars, and they were sat sort of in the south stand right next to the platform where like the BBC, like Gabby Logan and John Barclay was. Apparently some English lad was pissed up right next to the platform singing Swing Low, trying to like disrupt the BBC. And apparently Barclay just like leant over and he was just like, shut the fuck up, mate. No one likes you. And like, he just like completely folded and this bloke just like sat down. So really, really enjoyable to hear.
That's class.
So, yeah, it was a hell of a day at sold-out BT Murrayfield, and we're going to go through all of that and talk about what it means in the context for the tournament and the big trip to Cardiff at the weekend. But we'll start off with thanking, you know, an undefeated sponsor. It must be a great place to be if you are at Fanbase. There are sponsors for this first portion of the Six Nations, and they are changing the sports landscape with their technology, and they are from right here in Scotland. So if you are a rugby club looking to go digital, Fanbase is the partner you've been waiting to hear from. In a matter of hours, you can launch a mobile app for your supporters containing news, videos, articles, sell tickets to your lunches, to your events, and to your matches, all in one place. They're already making huge inroads in football, and they're now looking to do the same in rugby. So get in touch. You can find them at fanbaseclub.com or get them onto Twitter at fanbase_club. That is Fanbase. Thanks very much for all their support. So we've talked about the festivities before and after the matches, lads. Matt, talk me through your sort of, give me your sort of top line thoughts on the game itself. Scotland, obviously winners, 20 points to 17. What did you make of the performance?
Yeah, I wrote in the newsletter that Substack Thistle Rugby Podcast. I thought the performance was probably a 6 or a 7 out of 10. And then I rewatched the whole game yesterday. The 10-second skip function on YouTube is quite good. You can sort of cut out a lot of unnecessary scrum time, etc. And I actually think it was probably more of a 7 out of 10, because I think that a lot of things didn't work quite as they would have wanted. I think particularly the lack of possession and territory they had would be maybe a bit of a concern. But I think that obviously the fact they won the game is really important, and the maturity they showed to get that result. But I also think there were some good technical sides to the performance, like the defence completion rate of 94%. I thought kicking game was excellent from Hogg, Russell, Price. We were very good under the high ball, and our exits were great. And ultimately, when we had chances, we took them. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement, but I think Scotland should be pretty happy with the performance as well as the result.
Alan, in the Pod WhatsApp group, you've been distinctly upset, not just that you weren't allowed to come out with the lads after the game, but about sort of, you've been sort of downplaying Scotland's performance. Do you disagree with Matt?
Just the knock-on effects of not being able to pay £5 for a warm WKD in fingers, sort of really infiltrating my sort of emotional state. No, I think I sort of split it into sort of three sections, I think, the match. So you look at the first 40, I'd probably give Scotland like a 6. You generally didn't have a lot of ball, pretty dominated in terms of obviously territory and possession, and sort of a mix of Scotland's defence and pretty strong defence, both in terms of sort of individual tackling and scrambling, but also just England's general sort of lack of being able to finish a lot of those opportunities, or I guess being clinical, meant that we sort of got to halftime. And I don't know about you two, but I was I felt a little bit shocked that we were actually winning, you know, 10-6. It really did feel like we had been the slightly worse off team in that first half. And then you sort of switch to sort of the third quarter, where I think I would give Scotland maybe a 4. I think the game management was really poor. And I think as you sort of got to that 60-minute period when Marcus Smith scored that try and they went 17-10 up, I genuinely thought the game was over, and I thought England were going to sort of pull away. And then you sort of get into that last quarter where you obviously have that first part where you had the back-to-back cross kick, which I think was unbelievable. And then I think just generally how Scotland managed that game, apart from maybe the last sort of five minutes was absolutely world-class. So I think overall, I think probably what Matt's saying is right in terms of that performance, but I think actually sort of three very different parts of the game, which I think given what happened against Exeter for Glasgow a few weeks ago, I wouldn't have expected at all. And I think actually sort of even sort of 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think we would have got back in that game.
Yeah, I think that feels about right. And certainly, definitely that when we went 7 points down, it certainly felt like it was gone. And like Murrayfield went, I don't know if you guys felt this as well, Murrayfield went really flat for about 10 minutes. Having been absolutely bouncing, it went really, really flat. Looking into those individual performances, Alan, you picked out the double cross kicks. Finn getting lots and lots of plaudits. Was it his sort of all-round controlling game or his kicking that you think he sort of excelled in?
I think, especially in the first half, as sort of Matt pointed out, I actually think mainly around exits, he was a pretty influential figure. I think just more from a forward standpoint, we seem to sort of struggle to get the ball and maintain the ball. And I don't think that's a fault of Finn. And then in that second half, you know, ultimately, we needed a piece of inspiration. And that's ultimately what he delivered, right? You know, what the back-to-back cross kick, you know, not only gave some momentum, but also created a situation in which an England player was in a role that he felt incredibly uncomfortable with and made a massive mistake. And it's actually interesting comparing it to Marcus Smith, who had a crossfield kick opportunity, which if he put it on point, England would have scored a try in that first half and he wasn't able to execute it. So I think just being able to execute at what is a key moment with a lot of pressure is exactly what we need from Finn, and he delivered on it, right?
Certainly felt that in the big moments, the narrative of sort of master versus apprentice seemed to come true. And we all love a bit of narrative. I mean, sticking with other individual performances, Matt, you talk about those sort of senior players coming through, Hoggy overruling Finn to sort of go for the posts to put us to 2017. Is that the sort of like mature decision that perhaps Scotland have been lacking over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, it happened in the autumn as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Against, was it Australia? I can't remember. But yeah, I thought overall, Hogg, it was a kind of captain's performance, I think there's been some question marks around whether you make your fullback captain. But if you can display that sort of security at the back, then I think it breeds quite a lot of confidence in the team. I thought that maybe he had one kick charged down, but apart from that, his kicking, he sort of won the kicking tennis battle on quite a few occasions. And when he first mucked up, but then scooped up that Max Malin's kick and then managed to beat him and managed to sort of hold the ball up for support to arrive, you kind of felt like he couldn't do much wrong. And ultimately, it's a bit like Finn. He had one real opportunity in attack, and it was that outside line taking Itoje or bringing Itoje out of the line that put Darcy Graham through. As I say, I think it was captain's performance and maybe one of his most complete international performances for quite a while, actually.
Hoggy did have that moment, which I've had previously, where that split second between the ball leaving your hands and your foot hitting the ball and you get tackled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is always like a really upsetting moment if it's ever happened to you. I thought Itoje read that play perfectly. And it was actually Ezekwe that had who ultimately, I think Itoje, if Ezekwe had stayed on Graham, Itoje had Hoggy all day. It was clearly he rushed up, which puts a little bit more pressure on Ezekwe. But it was interesting that I actually think, you know, Itoje read exactly what was going on, and it was more, you know, clearly Graham just hit that short line and was able just to get through that little gap between Youngs and Ezekwe.
Alan, is it now, do you want 30 seconds to do your apology to Darcy Graham, or is that going to be later on?
No, it's completely fair. It's interesting. I think, you know, firstly, I said that it wasn't a day for Darcy Graham, and fundamentally, I think he probably had the two of the three pivotal moments in the whole match. So, you know, what the hell do I know? I also think on for Tooney, I would say that he made three big calls, maybe two, maybe slightly more than others, which was Darcy to start in the wing. I think Gilchrist to start in the row was a big one. And then potentially Johnson versus Tupeloto versus Redpath, etc. And I think actually for Johnson, he didn't really get any chance to do much, right? I don't think it really matters who was in that 12 shirt for the first 60 minutes. I don't think they're doing very much. But for those two key decisions around Graham and Gilchrist, I think he's, you know, retrospectively, two massive and absolutely correct calls, because I think both players were probably in your top three or four Scotland players on the day, right?
And his fourth big call was handing the debut to Ben White.
Yeah.
The most impactful what the fuck selection since Daryl Marfo.
I mean, for your impact per minutes on the pitch, Ben White, it might be the most impactful sub ever.
Possibly in world rugby history.
I think just going back to Darcy Graham, I think it still could have been quite a bad selection if England had kicked better, or not a bad selection, but could have caused us some more trouble. But I felt like England's kicking just wasn't quite on the money. And even when they did kick well, to be fair, we dealt very well with it. 100%. England kicking was all over the shot.
Yeah, and there was even a few moments in the first half where they had sort of your classic sort of maybe like a 4-3 or a 5-3, and you had someone like Elliot Daly sort of grubbering it through. And I just think Finn and Hogg sort of covering the backfield in those sort of moments are quite comfortable with that.
A lot of the time as well, those kicks just dribbled into touch. And, you know, maybe we'll talk about it more when we come to the forwards, but Scotland's lineup was 100%. And even in those, when we're throwing in from our 5 meter line, we're going over the top to Figgerson, getting a good platform and actually clearing the ball quite comfortably. So I don't really know why they... Obviously, it was a pre-planned tactic, but it didn't quite seem the right one.
There was... In terms of that first half, there was quite a few moments where I thought Scotland would potentially try and kick it out and they kept the ball in play. Do you think that was a deliberate tactic to try and keep the pace of the game high? Because it felt in that first half like England were trying to slow it down and Scotland were trying to keep the pace high.
Yeah, maybe. Although I think that actually when England got going, they were making meters getting over the game line relatively easily. And I think I was looking at some of the stats and like even Ludlam and I think Simmons made more meters than Matt Fagerson in total.
Yeah.
And I actually felt like Smith was the one who was directing things and wanting to put pace on it. But there was sort of this, when the ball got outside him, this pre-planned kicking game. I also think as well, in terms of the kicking tennis, you know, you maybe look at those guys who are in the backfield for England, March and Stewart at Malins. And Scotland probably thought we can put Russell and Hogg in the backfield and probably win that kicking battle 7 times out of 10. So I don't think it's actually a bad strategy.
I also just don't think Scotland were that scared of what a Marchant, Stewart, Malins back three can bring from a running perspective. Mm. You know, versus Doohan, Hogg and Darcy Graham, I actually think it's a much more ineffectual kind of kick return, especially someone like Freddie Stewart. He's not, I don't think he's someone who's going to step and sort of break the line with ease, right?
So yeah, you talk about people that can sort of step and make massive impact. Matt, what did you think of Doohan in this game? It seemed to be that he was, you know, really important for sort of turning the English defence, but also just like a little bit of getting Scotland out of trouble when they just needed somebody to get them over the line.
Yeah, I think when he got his hands on the ball, it seemed as if the England defence was actually slightly scared of him. And the amount of first up tackles that they missed on him, I think, just sort of fed that fear. And it was good to see him actually being brought into the attack. at one point, and I think it was Daly he ran through, but, you know, made like an easy 10, 15 meters. I think he was penalized in the end, and I think he was penalized on a couple of occasions, and I've seen a few people on Twitter saying that he tends to run away from support slightly, which I have some sympathy with, but I also think if you see Doohan with the ball, the chances are he's going to break tackles. So I think it's the onus of the rest of the team to support him. But yeah, I also think he was very good under the high ball. And I think on a couple of occasions when either Hogg or Russell were under pressure, ship it onto Doohan, and you know he's going to make yards. He's going to break a couple of tackles and hold the ball up, allow his forwards to get back and support. Yeah, I thought he was actually a really effective weapon in the end on Saturday.
And that right arm. I know Finn Russell's getting all the attention for, I don't know what would you say his sort of pose is in that sort of post match photo, sort of doing the sort of pinky and thumb out.
Is it like a gang sign?
Yeah, is it a gang sign? I don't know.
I don't
is
know.
It not like a is it not like an Aussie hang loose thing?
Yeah, let's go with that. Right, yeah, less aggressive.
But also just the right hand side, Doohan's doing sort of classic like strongman sort of bicep tense, and it's genuinely like I've got some pretty big thighs, like really big thighs, and it's maybe the same size as one of my thighs. It's
enormous. There's also it's quite telling in quite a lot of like the Scotland celebration photos. Doohan is like tensing his arms, like, sort of fairly gratuitously.
Fair play, the man is obscene, and he's still so quick.
He's free, a power athlete. Like, I don't think Scotland have never had a winger like him, or maybe somebody that's as a ferocious ball carrier as him.
No, not at all. But he's still also quite light on his feet. There was that moment where he sort of dropped it, but dropped it backwards, and then made sort of that 30, 40 meter break just before Hall gave the pen. And he can move on his feet quite quickly, which for a winger of that size you normally don't have. But yeah, the other moment, and just on the backs, I in my sort of seat in the south stand, I thought that Sam Simmons was going to get red carded for knocking out Ali Price, but on reflection, or after a rewatch, it was actually a head-on-head clash, which I think, in theory, could have got Ali Price sent off.
Yeah, head-on-head is a red card, right?
Yeah, but it was just that Price got ended, so no one looked into it.
let's stick on Ali Price though, Matt. We talked about the power of Scotland's exits, which has not necessarily been a strength of the team previously, but his kicking game, you know, we talked a lot with some sort of tartan tinted glasses, particularly over the Lions tour, about Ali Price's kicking game, but some of his exit kicking and his wider kicking game was spot on at the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting to see the evolution in Ali Price from a guy who was probably better known for his running game versus his kicking game in particular. I think his pass has always been pretty good, but you know, he doesn't necessarily make those kind of breaks anymore, even though I think he probably could, but his kicking game has come on massively. And we were talking about how good Scotland were at those exits earlier on. I think that a lot of that came from his box kicking, and whether it was kicks to touch or contestable kicks, I think pretty much every single one was bang on the money. And I at the time, I wasn't quite sure what had led to him going off the HIA. So rewatching it, he gets absolutely smashed by Simmons, is on the deck for quite a while, gets up and plays another sort of 3 or 4 minutes in which he puts in, I think, 3 box kicks. They're all absolutely bang on the money before he goes away for his HIA. It was actually like quite incredible bit of performance for that bit of time.
Does it make up for his Times interview in the week leading up to the match?
I don't think that was an interview with Ali Price. I think they were like, let's interview an influencer. And then they found out that Ali Price lived with one. It was basically all about her and her rabbit. And that's absolutely fine. But it was really weird to see it in the sports section.
Mate, the man's just won the Calcutta Cup again. He can have a pet rabbit if he wants.
Look, have as many rabbits as you like, Ali. If you keep playing like this, and I thought the sort of the stories, you know, about how he struggled over lockdown and how that sort of led him to, you know, running a lot, losing a lot of weight, and that sort of knocked onto his form. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting, but I did think that 80% of it was. I thought it was a bit strange that we were hearing about him sliding into her DMs and how
that
they met.
That was the weirdest bit.
I was like, yeah. I was like, Ali, did you know this was the direction this was going in when this was set up?
I think the SRU knew about it. Like, what have you published?
I don't know. Well, I mean, they wouldn't have let Ali Price go on without some sort of say-so. So there you go. It was a big weekend for Scotland wives and girlfriends. Eve Canning, I think Finn's girlfriend, was interviewed as well over the weekend about how she wants to live up to Finn's levels as a heptathlete. So there you go.
How did you know that? Where did you come across that interview?
My dad actually sent it to me. So there you go.
Good man.
Yeah, I've just got an alert for all the girlfriends of the Scotland squad. Because they're also a really good source of content on like international nights out, because they're not subject to like the SRU's like social media crackdowns. So usually you get some good content in the background.
And I know we're making a slight detour, and we will get back to the forwards. But so obviously from Xander's interview, it sounds that at least some people went out.
Yeah,
I think the only sighting we have was not Hamish Watson and Magnus Bradbury in Taco Bell.
I haven't seen that.
Someone said that Magnus Bradbury and Hamish Watson were dining out in Taco Bell at like 10 p.m. after the match, and I think there's one just at the West End.
10 p.m.
Is there?
Yeah. So maybe you were because you were there. You might.
I wasn't miles away from the West End. At
yeah,
10
just
PM.
On Shanwick Place.
I couldn't be sure, but. At one point in Fingers, we had someone on our shoulders, and I think it was Gregor Townsend. I can't rule it out. Look, that's all I'm saying. I think it could have been him. Should we talk about the forwards, though, Alan? I mean, should we start with, I guess, one of the other talking points when we were doing the preview pod last week was the choice to keep Matt Ferguson in the eight shirt, not roll the dice with Matt Ferguson. Some people thought that, sorry, roll the dice with Magnus Bradbury. And then he rolls out, you know, possibly a formative performance in the Scotland jersey, man of the match in the Calcutta Cup. You know, what did you make of him on the day, Alan?
Yeah, well, I just realised when I made that big point about Townsend having three big selections, I completely forgot about Matt Ferguson and Magnus Bradbury, which is obviously the addition, the biggest
fourth.
One as well. The fourth. It's really, really, really good. And I think fundamentally there was a couple of key moments in an attack where Scotland needed to get over the advantage line and needed that quick ball, which he delivered. And then both in terms of his just tackling, but also just abrasiveness at ruck time. I just thought generally it was a really good all-round performance. That was exactly what Scotland needed, especially in that first half.
I think as well, Alan, you might have said on last week's pod that Ferguson had never really had a defining international performance. So you're just getting all the big calls right, wrong, left, right, and centre.
Well, it seems to just sort of keep happening. Especially it was the year ago when we basically spent a quarter of the pod saying how George Turner couldn't hit arrows, and now he's become potentially the most efficient line-out thrower in Northern Hemisphere rugby. So, you know,
it is another proof point to suggest that our pod is part of the pre-match sort of warm-up. They're just, I think there's definitely something here. There's correlation, certainly, between these events. But I mean, yeah.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I think Matt Ferguson had a massive performance, and I can't remember which one of you it was, but you know, Grant Gilchrist putting in an absolutely massive shift. A lot, we were all quite surprised that he was picked over Cummings, but Matt, a pretty massive performance from him.
Yeah, I quite like that balance between Gray and Gilchrist. In terms of you've got that sort of bigger lock that's maybe there for scrummaging, tackling, carrying, and then you've got a slightly taller, probably like a little bit leaner lock who's your kind of major line-out jumper. And the line-out was 100% again, like it was on our own ball, with a couple of steals thrown in for good measure as well. And I think Grant Gilchrist was a pretty big part of that. And I think also he had a really good game in the loose. Watching the game back, he was involved in quite a lot of the big tackles, whether he was coming in as the kind of second man on that. I think he actually had a really, really good game, and I'd be tempted to keep him there rather than bring in Cummings.
Sorry, I accidentally put myself on mute. And we'll come on to talk about sort of potential changes that we might want to make before Wales. But I think one thing that is worth talking about was changes that were made during the game. I mean, not typically an area of strength, certainly not during the time we've been doing the pod. Alan, how impactful was it to be able to take off, you know, a very quality front row and replace it wholesale with another very quality front row?
The bomb squad. Can't believe we've got our own version.
Yeah, what I love about it is it is two-thirds South African as well.
I know. And I never really feel like Hooker is really like the definitive part of the bomb squad as well. It's very much like the props that are coming on.
I thought Schumann in particular was really good when he came on.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think there was a few people sort of talking about whether Schumann would start, and I still think that Sutherland gives a lot around the park. I think when you look at the try that Scotland scored in the first half, obviously Sutherland was working back hard for the quick line out, and he was the first man at that ruck over Sam Johnson, ensuring that they got that quick ball. And I think sometimes just that pace around the park is what Sutherland can bring you over someone like a Schumann.
And yeah, detail. I think it was Charlie Morgan at the Telegraph like broke down that it was Ferguson and Sutherland that were like on the ground on the halfway line. They got back to the 10 and then basically went straight back to clear out that ruck. Got just like a little down up shuttle, like after however many minutes of play when they would have been absolutely blowing, like savage work, right?
No, exactly. And I think, and then Schumann, you know, just coming on with 25 minutes to go, it just brings such an impact, which someone like a Sutherland is just not going to be able to give you, right? I genuinely, when, I can't remember, I think it was after the England penalty, Scotland were kicking off towards where I was sitting, and I looked at Xander Ferguson, and he put in an absolute shift in the first half, and he looked fucked. He genuinely looked like he had nothing left in the locker, which is completely fair. Obviously, he just put in like a great 50 minutes and like ended himself. But yeah, it was definitely, I think, when the bomb squad came on, I was happy because I felt like they both had put in a pretty massive shift, especially in defence. And it was good to have that sort of additional sort of dose of energy coming on. And obviously, Rambo thankfully was able to sort of keep up that pretty good sort of line out performance.
I actually thought the starting front row had really good games. It was just the scrum that didn't quite work. And it felt like quite a lot of the infringements were sort of quite technical rather than them getting out scrummage. Like I think George Turner got done for this hooker break thing,
yeah,
whatever it's called.
The
foot break, whatever it's called. He seemed a bit miffed.
I actually still don't know what that means.
Yeah, because it came up on the big screen in Murrayfield. It was like penalty reason, foot break not applied. And I was like, okay, sounds cool.
Turner did it in the first place, and it was just a short arm free kick. And then McAnally did it, and it would turn into a penalty. But I thought in the loose, those guys had really good games. There was just something about seeing like Schumann, Nell, McAnally, Skinner, Bradbury coming on that, although the game was very tight, gave me like quite a lot of confidence, actually.
The thing is, you riff off those names, Matt. If any one of those five had been named in the starting 15, we all would have been like, yeah, okay, I kind of get that. Like that, we're almost at a sort of interchangeable level of quality there, which again is somewhere we've not been for a long time.
Yeah, I think particularly Skinner was the one who sort of stole that last line out, and then one of his carries where he ran over the top of, I think it might have been Curry, and then offloaded to Watson. That sort of allowed Scotland to surge into that position where they were Finn bound across the cross field. So he had quite a few big involvements.
So looking ahead to the weekend, Alan and I will be in Cardiff, looking forward to it. What, if any, changes do you think we might see to the starting 15, Matt? Obviously, there's going to be an injury-enforced one with Jamie Ritchie not reporting for duty. Would you bring Skinner straight into that?
I think so. I think that he's a kind of like-for-like sub in some ways. I think that he offers that option at line-out time that you would lose with Roy Darge, for instance, I think. And I also just think he's a really high-quality player who has never let Scotland down. And I don't see him. I think Jamie Ritchie had a really good game at the weekend. But I don't see you losing that much by having Skinner in there. Part of me would love a, you know, Darge-Watson combination. And you do look at that Wales team and think they've got basically three sevens in their back row who are all very good at the breakdown. But I think that having Skinner in there provides you the best balance.
Yeah, and we are hearing very early discussions, very early rumours that Skinner is potentially winning that race to replace Ritchie in the starting 15 at the weekend. Another little tidbit that we've picked up is perhaps that Sione Tuipulotu might be coming in at 12 for Sam Johnstone. Alan, you sort of talked about Sam not really doing anything wrong, not being sort of hugely in the game, but if it is to be Tuipulotu, what sort of change do you think that can potentially bring at the Millennium Stadium?
It probably gives you maybe a little bit more impetus. Obviously, he's not got the same probably general sort of connection with someone like a Harris. You know, Johnstone and Harris played a lot together, and I think Johnstone is just incredibly solid at sort of managing that sort of, especially the sort of channel between him and Finn. But at the same time, quite a few of those Welsh players have played against and been brutalised by Tuipulotu in the last few months. You know, especially more recently, sort of the Ospreys, where he had a sort of man of the match performance, and I think, you know, up against Tompkins and, I don't know, potentially Josh Adams. I don't actually know what they're going to be doing in the centres. You know, two players that, you know, obviously aren't terrible in defence, but aren't particularly big, and having that option of what is an incredibly strong runner of the ball is a useful option to have.
And I suppose if that does come to pass, it means Cam Redpath not involved again. Do you think that's just a, I suppose we're totally speculating in the mind of Gregor Townsend here, but maybe see a red path on the bench, perhaps offer something a little bit different?
Yeah, I think that although the Scotland tactics okay in parts, I think that it was just a bit of a breakdown when we tried to get the ball beyond 12. And whether that's just mistakes on the pitch or there's just not quite that connection there between Finn and Sam Johnson at the moment, I'm not sure. But you'd like to think that, as we talked about before, Redpath just offers that sort of second 10 option. And I quite like the sound of that, really, in terms of him being able to bring the likes of Doohan and Darcy into the game properly. I think that Tuipulotu offers a lot in that midfield as well. Maybe a little bit more go forward ball than Sam Johnson, who I think in that role actually did reasonably well at the weekend, but maybe you've got a little bit more punch there.
I wouldn't be upset if Redpath gets the gig. I think probably your need for someone like Tuipulotu is a little bit lessened by obviously having Doohan. And to be fair, Harris can carry relatively hard as well. So there's a part of me that I'd like to see Finn and Redpath again working together. I think I sort of was about to say I like the idea of them working together. They've literally only played together once, and it looked great. But I wonder whether, just with Tompkins at 12, whether they'll like the idea of having someone like Tuipulotu sort of hitting in between him and Bigger.
Yeah. We do love Cam Redpath and hope to see him back in a Scotland shirt very, very soon. Any other changes that you think that Tuipulotu might be considering, Matt? It's kind of hard to roll the dice after winning the Calcutta Cup.
I guess if Skinner comes in, do you think it's just a straight Cummings coming onto the bench?
Would have thought so.
Yes, I think so. And then still have Bradbury there. I mean, there's potentially an argument that you bring Bradbury on at 8 and shift Ferguson to 6. But once again, I just think that Skinner offers you enough there, and Ferguson's had such a good game at 8 that you want to carry on that momentum.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it does feel like a lot of those players in just Scotland generally now have that momentum. Is such obviously like a strange and like intangible thing, but you can sort of feel it that as we sort of shift on, we've kind of played badly but won, which is a very un-Scottish thing to do, and we sort of move on into this sort of match where we're playing a team that's just been pumped, and you do feel that hype train just building, and I'm so ready to sit down and crack open a can on that train to Cardiff.
So ready. This time Matt's not being allowed to come. Banned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a ticket. Being banned from going. I'm a wife. Classic.
So handpacked. Well, we will come back to talk about Scotland, Wales and preview it. We're going to do another pod later in the week when the team is announced. We'll do a little bit of a preview pod. And as I say, Al and I are going to be down there. So looking forward to catching up with plenty of you in and around the Millennium Stadium at the weekend. But there is some URC rugby this weekend. We're going to have a quick look forward to that. Edinburgh fans, you've been grumbling a little bit on our social medias. We are going to talk a little bit about your game at Leinster, don't worry. But the fine folks at Glasgow Warriors allowed us to speak to one of our heroes this week, caught up with Duncan Weir as Glasgow prepare to play Munster on Friday night at Scotstoun. He also had a bit of a chat and gave us his thoughts on the Scotland game. So here is a quick chat with Duncan Weir. All right, absolutely delighted to be joined on the line. I think he's walking his dogs at the moment. Duncan Weir. Duncan, how are you, man?
Hi there, how are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad. Have you recovered from the weekend? Were you watching it?
Yeah, no, I watched it in the house, in the home comforts of the house and not in the elements, but it was a great game, and yeah, the boys dug in after the first half and got the result, which was fantastic to see.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you think it sets them up for the rest of the tournament?
I think they're in a good place. I thought pre-tournament, even with the squad that got announced, I thought you can see that Scottish rugby is in a very good place, and the squad depth and the competition for places was up where the probably the highest I've probably can remember it anyway in the near future. Or just what's past there. So no, we're in a good strong space, and there were a lot of resolve in that first half, and a couple of bits of magic from Finn in the last 20 that carried the boys home.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sort of good place that Scottish rugby's in is sort of translating across to Glasgow and Edinburgh as well, both sort of riding high in the URC. Got Munster coming your way on Friday evening. What is it about the Munster and Glasgow rivalry? It always seems to produce A, good games, and B, like, there's a bit of niggle there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it stems back from my first spell at the club, and we obviously were starting to turn over the big teams in the league, and probably the Munster didn't take it too kindly. They were the first team that, as their physical nature to their game, that once we were starting to dominate them, they were the first people to kind of not throw their toys at the pram, but obviously come gunning for us and trying to almost bully us at times. So, we've got a good bit of history, and obviously we've got a huge amount of bragging rights from the 2015 final.
Yeah, absolutely. And how, obviously you were just in today, there was the Scotland game at the weekend. How does the week look for you guys running into a Friday night with Munster coming to town?
So we trained yesterday on Sunday. We came in and got together, and we were coming off the back of a week off, so it was good to get back as a team and get thinking about our next job in hand, which is Munster on Friday night. So we train today, we'll have tomorrow off, and then train Wednesday, team run Thursday into the game on Friday night. So yeah, it's a huge opportunity to get back at home. Love to see the fans back in the La Rochelle game, and we had a really good atmosphere at Scotstoun that night. So under the lights again on a Friday night, which is arguably the fans' favourite day for a home game. So hopefully we get a big turnout, and we can set Scottish rugby on a high leading into the Saturday test.
Absolutely, and obviously with a lot of lads away with Scotland, might be a slightly changed team, but there's some pretty interesting and talented young lads coming through at Glasgow. You're a bit of an elder statesman, I think we can say now. How's it been seeing these young lads come through?
Yeah, no, it's been great. I'm fully aware that I'm probably the most senior back in the back division at the minute after Pete Horn retired in January there. So I've got the old man's tag at the minute, which is I'm happy to wear. I still feel good body wise, but no, I was delighted to see the young guys coming through. I think we've got a really good squad at Glasgow, just with the call offs at around about Christmas, and then the couple of COVID stuff. Like, we've not seen the vast amount of the talent in our squad, because the team that we're playing, we're doing a good job. So hopefully over the Six Nations period, like you say, guys can grab the opportunity and really push the team forward to make competition and just more headaches really for selectors. But yeah, I think the one from the Connacht game and obviously La Rochelle, these couple of touches, was Ollie Smith coming through, and yeah, I'm delighted to see how well he's going, and if I can help these young guys come through and take some pressure off them. Obviously, being an older guy and a decision maker, and I'm happy to wear any decisions or take any heat off those guys and just let them go and play and enjoy themselves as best they can.
And positionally, you've got a young lad like Ross Thompson coming through. Yep. How's it been sort of working with him, and what sort of, he's obviously got a sort of bag of tricks, but is he someone that you've been impressed with sort of up close?
Yeah, no, Ross has done really well. He's got a lovely left foot on him, and he controls the game really well at 10. We're pretty similar in some aspects of our game management, which is looking great. It's great for us too to kind of see the game in the same light. But I've been really impressed with him. He's took his opportunities, it's been a long old season at times for me. Not getting as much game time as you probably hoped. I had a few soft tissue injuries that meant my game time was having to be limited and all the rest of it. But nonetheless, Ross deserved every opportunity he got, and I'm really looking forward to see where he can push forward in the next couple of years.
All right, good stuff. Well, it all starts, as you say, Friday night against Munster. We'll let you get off. Appreciate you giving us a little bit of time this afternoon, and chat to you soon.
Perfect. Thank you. Cheers now.
Cheers, mate. Bye. So there you are, Duncan Weir, always an absolute treat to catch up with the Pudding live. And if you are interested in going to Glasgow versus Munster, there are still tickets available on the Glasgow Warriors website, starting from £28, concessions from £24. What a perfect way to kick off a rugby weekend, Glasgow versus Munster at Scotstoun on Friday night. Get yourself involved. Lads, should we talk a little bit about Edinburgh just to finish off? Travelling over to the RDS to play against Leinster, who, despite having literally the whole Ireland team away, are still going to be able to put up a formidable side. Mike Blair, Matt, talking this week about, he's sort of comparing this fixture to Edinburgh's big one against Saracens that they went on to win in Europe as a sort of a benchmark of where they are. I mean, what sort of chance do you think Edinburgh have got going away to the RDS this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, obviously both sides have been missing a lot of players. I think that with Dave Cherry now called into the Scotland squad, there's a few fans on Twitter basically wondering where the next hooker is coming from. Because I think at the moment you've only really got that Adam McBurney guy and Patrick Harrison, I last saw, was on loan at Wasps. He might have come back by now.
But we'll be with the under-20s.
Yeah, he is with the under-20s.
Yeah, I wonder what would take precedent in that. He might have to play for Edinburgh because there might be no one else. It's hard to see a heavily weakened Edinburgh team. But then they still have the likes of Buffelli and Moyano, Mata may be available to play. I think they can still send across a strong enough side. It's just that Leinster do have such strength in depth, and it seems as if they can still roll out a Devon Toner, a Sean Cronin, Reese Ruddock, Alatoa in the pack, for instance, that it's definitely going to be a difficult one.
A few of the injuries in the back row, I guess. I'm not sure if Crosby's going to be back or Haining will be back. So you're sort of left with, I imagine, I guess, Kunavula, Boyle and Muncaster, which is actually not the worst in the world, but it's obviously a mix of quite a lot of inexperience up against what I imagine will be a Leinster pack, which is well-drilled and sort of trying to, as they usually do, get significantly sort of quick ball. So, it'd be interesting. It'll actually be, you know, looking at a nice little Friday night match. Keen to see how some of them get on, especially someone like Boyle and Muncaster, who may be looking to get a bit more game time with Scotland players away. See how they can do against what is ultimately going to be an extremely strong Leinster side.
Yeah, absolutely. Edinburgh got a chance to go back to the top of the URC. Ulster currently sitting there, but Edinburgh have got a game in hand. It is a massive weekend of Scottish rugby. Last little bit to talk about before we go, lads. It's been rumoured that Scotland are going to tack on an extra international fixture to their summer tour to Argentina and pick up a game against Chile on the way. Alan, good opportunity to cap anybody that's got a Scottish granny.
100%. Literally, Tua Peloto's little brother.
Yep, definitely. He's getting capped.
Get him in the squad.
Jack Dempsey.
Oh, no brainer. I mean, to be fair, that's a nice little tour as well for the Scotland team. Argentina and Chile, sort of little bit away, kind of opportunity to sort of like tunique and kind of rest some of the, I reckon you sort of rest in your Hogs, your Russells, etc., bringing in some of the younger guys. And just, I'm at generally from like a tour morale standpoint, it's a pretty fun place to be, right?
You've toured Argentina before, Alan. Have you got any words of advice for the Scotland lads? What to do, what not to do?
Me and Matt both have. We've got a 100% record in South America.
Nice. And what about on the rugby field?
Wow, we were. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
My advice would be wear your kilt at all times when you go out. It's quite effective.
Quite effective, indeed.
It's quite effective for like people being nice to you and getting into places.
Alan, backtracking.
but no, it'd be absolutely fantastic. It is actually a great place to go and play rugby as well.
Good stuff, and nice to get a sort of tier. I mean, will Chile even be a tier two nation?
Yeah, they beat Canada.
Did they beat
the USA? Or they at least like took the USA close? They sort of definitely sort of fit into sort of almost like your Romanias and Portugals, I would sort of
Portugal, yeah. I think when Squidge did that like top moments of the year last year, Chile were actually featured in a few clips. And they got some quite handy players actually.
Yeah.
They are 23rd in the men's world rankings. Below Hong Kong and Canada and Spain, just above Namibia and Russia, who have been at the World Cups recently.
Yeah.
Scotland, captained by Nick Haining, loses to Chile. That'd be so good.
Heard it here first. Well, always a pleasure to be here potting with you guys. Particularly after Calcutta Cup, when we will be back, as I say, later on in the week after the Scotland squad has been announced, to talk about all of that. In the meantime, join us on our social media feeds on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and subscribe to Scotland's only independent newsletter. That's on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Matt puts together some beautiful words, dropping with you on a Monday morning. So get yourself onto there as well, and we will be back. Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Do we need the use of the word independent in that statement?
Scotland.
No, it was a joke. I was joking. is it not just Scotland's only rugby newsletters? Is there all these other like professional ones?
The SRU put out dross links to their store and stuff like that.
No, I know.
Independent. It's like it's artisanally crafted. It's 100% organic newsletter.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then,
it's a newsletter dedicated to an independent Scotland.
Not to be confused with, although that could actually boost our readership quite significantly, I would have thought.
Yeah, a nice little crossover.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll have to go and think about how we can get some new followers. We will speak to you later on in the week. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.